Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Four Comic Junkies podcast, when the comics aren't enough and you need a little extra fix. I'm your host, JJ Hodges, and today I have a very special guest with me via telephone communicator device, Miss Chelsea Logan. Say hi, Chelsea.
Oh my gosh, hello. So exciting to listen to you do this.
I know, it's so much fun. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you for asking me. I'm honestly very flattered.
Oh yeah, you know, well, the thing is that I thought of you for this topic, which we'll get into. So for those of you who don't know, because obviously you probably don't know us personally, Chelsea and I met, it's about 3 years ago at New York Comic Con. I was dressed as Emperor Joker and she was Harley Quinn. And I was like, well, I gotta get a picture with Harley. So, you know, I was like, hey, can we get a picture? And you're like, sure. And then, you know, we're in line, you know, because in Comic-Con, you're basically in line for 99% of the time.
Like, that is Comic-Con.
So, you know, so we just started talking and we ended up both kind of bonding, which is pretty normal at a Comic-Con. You know, you're surrounded by nerds, basically. and, you know, we've been pretty good friends ever since.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So today we are talking, the topic is comics and feminism, and we are talking Harley Quinn, everyone's favorite mistress of mischief, milady of mayhem. I think I made both of those up.
You actually didn't. Those are very common names for her, so those are very good.
Oh, right. So I like the milady one. So, Chelsea, you like I said, when I met you, you were cosplaying as Harley. When did you first get into the character?
It was a very weird roundabout way. I was watching Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy, and I was like, oh, I really like this character. So then I went and I learned that Poison Ivy had, like, no comics except for the Gotham City Sirens. Mm-hmm. And so I went and read that, and I fell in love with Harley through that version of her, and then instantly I had to go pick it up. It was only like maybe, I guess, 4 years ago I started reading and like absolutely devouring everything with Harley Quinn. I just thought that like she was so funny and she was so messed up but still endearing at the same time, and it was just so nice to see that version of a woman in comics, because everything else I had read was just like the perfect woman, which is always just really hard to relate to for almost anybody.
Like a Wonder Woman type.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I love everything about Wonder Woman and everything she stands for, but it's not like I can really see myself in Wonder Woman. I can, and not that I'm going around, like, murdering people like Harley Quinn, but, like, I can see myself, and the choices she makes are based off of her emotions, mm-hmm. not necessarily just what's right.
Right. So I got into Harley, I remember, like, as a kid watching the animated series, and she mm-hmm. and she was, you know, obviously main character there, and at the time, I didn't really realize that she wasn't, you know, she was created for the show, and finding out, reading about her later and everything, realizing that, oh, they created her because, you know, they wanted to give Joker kind of a kooky hench girl, the same way that, like, the Adam West show, they always had kooky hench girls for all the different villains. And then, you know, it was Paul Dini that wrote her, and he just kind of kept putting her into scripts, and they kept using her, and she just very quickly became a fan favorite. Definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And like you said, she's so funny and quirky, and I think my favorite episode is Harley's Holiday with her.
It's
so cute because it's literally the first episode where there's no Joker in the episode. So it's mm-hmm. it's all about Harley and her journey, and it's basically like it's kind of a sitcom trope where there's a misunderstanding and she has to try and kind of clear her name, and it's really what it speaks to me about Batman in particular, because Batman's my favorite character. You know, is that he says to Robin the whole episode, this is just a misunderstanding, we have to help her. And Robin's just kind of like, yeah, okay. But and then at the end of the episode, I've seen memes of it. It's so cute when, all she wanted to do was buy a dress and she bought it, but they forgot to take the security tag, and that's when the whole episode goes off. She says, "No, I paid for it. I paid for it." And they're like, "No, we just want to take the tag off." She's like, "Get away from me. I paid for it." And then at the end of the episode, they take her back to Arkham, and her doctor says, "Well, we'll do a little bit more work with you." And she looks at Batman and says, "I've given you nothing but grief. Why did you go out of your way for me?" And he says, "I know what it's like to have a bad day. I had a bad day once too." And he gives her the dress. And she says, "Nice guys like you shouldn't have a bad day." And I'm kind of tearing up actually talking about it, because that's my favorite version of Batman, the Batman that believes in redemption for his enemies.
No, absolutely, because that was the thing I loved about that episode was it shows that like both of them still that like the good and the evil can still relate to one another. And I think that's like one of my favorite things about, I think this quote I read about Harley was the fact that people like complicate her so much. They're like, oh, she's black and white, it's really confusing, but like the fact is that she's just literally gray. Like she cannot be defined. She never makes a perfectly good choice or a perfectly bad choice. And the fact that like Batman can relate to that in that situation kind of shows you that like, yeah, he's a quote unquote stereotypically good guy, but he gets it. He understands. He can relate.
And that speaks a lot to me. And like when I was a kid, it was just like, they were just like fun shows to watch. But it's amazing, the show in general, how much it holds up. And like I said, that episode in particular, I can watch and as an adult really appreciate the very mature storytelling that they did with that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what about Harley speaks to you as a fan?
Sorry. I definitely think that the main thing that I relate to is the fact that she wears her heart on her sleeve. And so instantly it just makes her vulnerable and fragile while she's still incredibly strong. Because I think that that's one of the problems that I had when I first started trying to read comics was all of the characters were just incredibly stoic and they did the right thing. And yeah, they had some confusing moments, but they always end up doing the right thing at the right time. And the thing that I enjoyed about Harley was she was able to be flawed and make the wrong choices and still be sexy and still be allowed to do and wear whatever she wants. But it was all with good intention, because even if she was doing something because she was under the guise of her incredibly abusive relationship with the Joker, she did it because she thought that was what was right. And I think that it puts a more human face to comics instead of just something that's just a trope of what good and evil is.
And I think that especially in recent years, she's definitely become a feminist icon, in terms of she's very having overcome an abusive relationship and trauma. I think about that a lot, and I don't know, it's part of my issue with the Suicide Squad movie, which I did enjoy for the most part, especially Margot Robbie's performance. I mean, she's fantastic in it. But I didn't like the way they portrayed the Joker as kind of just lovesick over her. I was like, I don't think he would be. I think the way they should have portrayed him, the way he was in the animated series, it's more of a matter of possession for him, which is
I think that they tried to do that in that movie, and it was just executed incredibly poorly. Like in the scene where he's laying down, he has all of his possessions just like sprawled around him. I think it was just done really poorly, because I think that it came across exactly what you said. It came across like he was lovesick, when I think it was just supposed to be that she was another one of his weapons.
And
And I just think that was done so, yeah. So that's a different story.
no, no, you're totally right. And I think that's kind of how they played her in the animated series. There were kind of sweet moments between the two of them, but for the most part, you're looking at them, especially Mad Love, which I think is, when I was a kid reading it, I remember thinking it was one of like the best stories I ever read, and I still think that. but it's also kind of a cautionary tale a little bit about falling in love with the wrong guy or person, really, you know, because, you know, anybody can go through that. But I think it's obviously more common with women. There's just a, you know, especially the Joker in that, very much just when he doesn't want her, he just he casts her off to the side. And then when he wants her and she's not there, he's furious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that that's, I think the thing about Harley that I love, one, like when I say she's flawed, is that she gives a voice and kind of puts you in the mindset of someone who has gone through a domestic abuse relationship.
Yeah.
I think that that was one of the things I saw that Margot Robbie was talking about, how she had a really difficult time understanding why Harley would keep going back to the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And her acting coach recommended reading interviews of people who had gone through domestic relationships. And instantly she understood a little bit deeper about the character, because it's something that you just can't explain it. You keep going back because there's something emotionally. And I think to some extent have all done that. We've all gone back after a bad relationship that we know really, I shouldn't say we all, but a lot of us go back to relationships that we know we probably shouldn't go back to.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's something that draws us to that person, that's just inexplicable.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what I love seeing in like Mad Love and kind of all, and even the newer renditions of her. Like, I think that you get to see that a little bit more, that there's just something that you can't explain about the relationship that just keeps the two together.
Right. And, you know, I have a friend that was in an abusive relationship, and we all, I remember this was years ago, my friends and I, we all kind of noticed just certain things that would happen, and we'd say, you know, we'd be like, hey man, it's not okay that you talk to her that way. And she'd just kind of say, oh, well, he's not like that when you're not around. And that's sort of like the classic.
Of course. Thing, yeah.
You know, and just, and that always rubbed me the wrong way. Like, hey, but that's not okay. You know, and I'd say that. And I remember when they got engaged, I said that to her. I was like, I'm surprised you said yes. I really am. And she kind of laughed and she's like, well, we've been together for 2 years. I was like, yeah, 2 years, the next 50, you know, that's the same thing. And she kind of just shrugged it off. And it wasn't until years later, a friend of mine sent me, when I had moved away, he sent me his mugshot and said, you know, he was arrested. And, you know, and I read the thing and it was like, you know, abuse or domestic abuse or what, you know, whatever the charge was. And I texted her and I said, what is going on here? And she was like, I finally had enough. And I was like, good for you.
You know, oh, yeah, seriously.
You know, I was so incredibly proud of her in that moment. And I think that we all, you know, like you said, well, maybe not everybody, but we all have that. And, you know, I've had relationships where there's just something about the person that whatever it is, it's the sexual attraction, there's a physical attraction or a emotional or whatever it is that you're kind of like, well, this makes up for the other stuff when it shouldn't.
Yeah. And I think that that's the part that you just can't explain.
Yeah.
There are no words to, you can, like, kind of like what your friend said, like, you can keep explaining, like, well, it's not the same when you're not around, but mm-hmm. it probably is. It's just that the person's blinded by their love for something else about that person.
Yeah. I remember saying to one of our mutual friends, saying that I think what had happened was she grew up in a house where, like, her father treated her mother that way. So somewhere in her brain, it was like, well, this is how a man treats a woman, so it's okay. And my friend looked at me and said, you're 100% right about that. And that broke my heart, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Like, that's like the, not the comic version of Mad Love, but there's the novel version of Mad Love for Harley.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole entire 100 pages of talking about her childhood. And not that her dad was abusive, but her dad was a criminal and, you know, got arrested. And it kind of gave you, like, it fleshed that out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think, yeah, that's probably something, like, there is not childhood trauma per se, but it's just something that you've learned. And and accepted, and there's a certain attraction to that, just animalistically. Yeah. So
we're all,
I think that's something that definitely plays a part into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we're all just, you know, I mean, there's nature versus nurture, and we can't kind of escape that. There's that deep-seated stuff. When you're a kid, you're, you know, the way they describe it, it's like you're a sponge. You take mm-hmm. in everything. So you kind of grow up like, and I think it explains a lot about why people are the way they are. As much as, you know, you want to say, well, you can't blame everything on the parents. Well, that is 100% true. But, you know, Zachary Levi, the way he described it, it's like he had, because he was, you know, he was abused by his mother. He said, I had bad programming as a kid, and I had to find a way to get new programming. You know, it was like the kind of the best way he could describe it. And I was listening to that, and I started crying, and I was like, he's so right. That's the perfect way to describe it.
You know? Yeah, definitely. Like, you have those, the building blocks, they're really hard to break down.
Yeah.
And so just because someone can't do it doesn't make them weak, but it definitely makes someone incredibly strong if they're able to move past those traumas.
Right. And it's a personal journey that everybody has to go through. And you can have every single one of your friends saying to you, hey, you know, this isn't right. Like in the case with my friend, we were all looking at her going, hey, this isn't okay. This isn't okay. And she would just shrug us off, you know, kind of like you said, the, you know, well, you just don't understand. But it got to the point where it was like, for whatever reason, it finally clicked with her. And I'm glad it did. You know, they have a little kid together, you know, this beautiful little baby. And, or she's not a baby anymore. What is she? She's like, oh my God.
They're always babies now at this point.
Well, I, because it's like, you know, I think that about some of my friends. I'm like, I was there when your baby was born. I held them like just a few hours after the fact. And it's, you know, it's like that with my kid. You know, she's always going to be my baby, you know, like.
Of course, yeah.
She'll be 30 and I'll be saying that, but. but, you know, we're getting a lot deeper than I thought we would today.
Surprise!
well, actually, you know, it's funny because my friend Jesse, girl Jesse, because there's boy Jesse who comes on too.
Yes.
she and I talked about Buffy the Vampire Slayer and how it, you know, the nice thing about fiction, especially like science fiction or comic books in general, the reason that I love them so much is they can really tell these very real stories, but they can mask them with the costumes and the action. And it isn't until afterwards you're like, oh, wow, like that actually was telling a story. And we were saying that about Buffy, how Buffy was very, very good about that. And I think that with Harley, it's the mask of the fiction is just a little bit, it's more of a veil, you know what I mean? You can see it in there, and the way that Joker really just poisoned her mind and promised her the world, and if for whatever reason she didn't deliver, you know, he'd drop her in a second. But then if he needed her again, he'd be like, hey, where are you? I need you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what I loved about Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti's like version of her,
mm-hmm.
because they took her away. She was gone, like 100%. But I think that there's one part where she goes back to visit him,
mm-hmm.
and they even tied it into like the Suicide Squad too, where she thinks he's dead, and the thing I loved about it was just because the person has a few missteps doesn't make them completely a failure,
right?
Because in both versions, you know, she's trying to move past the Suicide Squad because she thinks he's dead, and literally goes crazy cutting his face off and like making it, putting it on Deadshot, making out with him.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then you have, you know, where she goes back to kind of visit him in Gotham to, she has like that sense of closure,
mm-hmm.
and she's not, and then from there she's able to start moving past and dating other people and discovering more about herself and her sexuality and what it means for her to be independent. And I think that that was what I loved about the new content that's been created about her, was it's still, because you can't completely ignore that. Like, that is a dynamic duo that is going to be part of her past always.
Right.
But just because she goes back to that past doesn't necessarily mean that she's wrong or weak or a failure, which is why I do think that she, like, what, kind of what you said earlier, I don't know if she's a feminist role model, but I definitely think she's a feminist icon. Because I don't think people should necessarily, I think that there are things that you can aspire to do similar to her, but there are a lot of things that, like, she still does things wrong. Like, you know, your response to something because you're angry shouldn't be to go and slap that across someone's face, but you should be able to express what you're feeling instead of keeping it bottled up, because that's how bad blood boils down, kind of all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the interesting thing about her is that she's on a list. She was, I don't want to say one of the first, because not necessarily, but there's sort of a list of the Batman rogues where they kind of have moved past the role of being the villain, and they're kind of not necessarily heroes, I guess, quote unquote, I don't really like this term, but anti-heroes, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously there's Catwoman, who's always kind of skirted the line between villain and hero. But then there's, you know, there's Clayface in the Detective Comics arc, the James Tynion, however you say his name.
Me and names are not friends.
But, you know, he's, well, either way, he's a fantastic writer, and he...
Absolutely.
And he made Clayface part of the Bat team, which I thought was very strange, but at least at first, and then I was reading it, and I was like, oh, this is cool, and he was doing kind of the same thing with him, like, I want to atone for my mistakes, and Batman would say, I believe you. So let me help you. And now Poison Ivy's on the list, which really surprises me, because I always thought of Poison Ivy being the epitome of a she has good intentions, but it's like the road to hell is paved with good intentions, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, where she's just, she kind of gives, you know, people with a green thumb a bad name, pretty much. But at the same time, I like that now there's a little bit more of a push to make her more of a heroic character. And there seems to be, or there is, I guess, a romantic relationship between Harley and Ivy, which I didn't expect, because I always liked the idea of thinking of them as, like, best friends. But now it's like, oh, wow, they're, you know, I think they're lovers, or, you know.
Yeah, the whole entire thing, at first, not that I was upset about it, because I'm so excited to see representation in the comics, but I thought it was a little unfounded, just because I thought it diminished their friendship a little bit, because kind of like what you said, you are able to just have friends that are girls and be incredibly close to them, and it doesn't necessarily have to be sexual. However, it definitely did make sense, because Harley is the kind of character who has so much love, and I, not to classify her as polyamorous, because I wouldn't, but in the same kind of respect, where it's just, she has so much love to give people, and I have always kind of thought that Poison Ivy will never be able to love something as much as she loves her plants.
Right.
And so I think that it's a really healthy balance. Their relationship kind of makes sense, that they would be drawn to one another.
Yeah.
In that way, because Harley will always understand that, and I don't think that Poison's ever going to get jealous about the fact that Harley might flirt with, you know, XYZ.
Right.
And I think that it made sense the more I thought about it, but at first I was kind of like, I felt like, I guess, a cop-out, because it felt like I would have rather them introduce a new character, but then I realized, it makes complete sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree that it's definitely a unexpected turn of events in the stories. But I guess there is some reality to it, where, you know, it's possible to have had a friend, and then all of a sudden you kind of look at this person and go, oh wow, now I have more feelings towards this person than I thought I did.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, I think we're all guilty of that at some point in our lives. And I, you know, it's something that, you know, I've never really admitted to this, but like I struggled with the whole, when I was a kid, I was super, like when I was really young, I was super awkward around girls. And then as I got older, when it was like, oh, you know, like it turns out that I can just be friends with girls as opposed to always thinking of them in a, I wonder if they would date me kind of a way. You know, when I was like 15, I was like super weird.
Here's the thing. I'm still like that around guys. I like go for eye contact. So, excuse me your ways, but.
I mean, I'm not completely over it, but I'm just a little bit better about it. Or at least I'm sort of just aware of it. It's like,
Sure,
oh.
yeah. I'm like, I know what I'm supposed to do now. Do I do it? No.
I know what the right thing to do is, you know, but
Yeah.
like, should I have to wake up at 9 a.m. to do a podcast, but am I going to have a couple more beers because we're watching Shaun of the Dead? Absolutely.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, this is off topic, but I was at a Halloween party last night because at the time of this recording, it's right before Halloween. Probably by the time this airs, it'll be like February. But anyway, when what was I going to say? Somebody came in dressed as Suicide Squad Harley, and you know, just you know, you live in New York and I live in Pennsylvania, and I was like, and I thought it was you for a second. I don't know why. She just ran by and just like the corner of my eye, I saw her, and I was like, oh my God, Chelsea's here! And then I was like, wait,
We're
no,
all there.
it's not her.
That would have been amazing. What a great story.
I've been like, holy crap, what's up, dude?
I do have family there, so you never know. It could be me.
Oh yeah, maybe. I'm pretty sure it wasn't you though, but well, it's
We'll never know now.
that's true, and you'll never tell. But you know, it's so great to see Harley be embraced by the fandom the way she has, because there are so many characters that have been created, you know, in all of comics, you know, and Batman, you know, this being Batman's 80th anniversary, what I really have been thinking about a lot is Batman has this wonderful legacy of characters, that, you know, most other characters don't really have. You know, there's some of them try to have it. I mean, sure, like Green Arrow has kids, and you know, now Superman has a son. But you know, but Batman's the one that there's something about him, you know, but you know, all the Robins still exist. You know, there's Batwoman, there's Batgirl, there's, you know, there's newer characters that have somehow still stood the test of time. And Harley's, you know, she's you know, Batman's 80, she's 27, I want to say, 26, 27.
Yeah.
And but you know, she but it feels like she's been there from the beginning. You know, and that says a lot about the like her staying power as a character. And
Oh, definitely, yeah.
yeah, and you know, I don't know if you have you ever read the Batman 66 digital comics?
I never got to finish them. They're on my list, but no, I did start them.
There's a, it's it. They were really great because they really did feel like episodes of a TV show.
Yeah.
Like I could hear Adam West in my head reading it. And it was great that they found ways to incorporate Harley Quinn and even a character like Bane into those, and but keep them in the style of the 66 show. And I thought that was so cool. And I read the Harley ones, and you know, she's like on roller skates and she's, you know, teasing Batman and Robin, and she's more of a, you know, especially in the spirit of the show, more of a jester or an annoying prankster rather than like, you know, a murderer or anything.
Yeah, very in the style of 66 too, yeah.
Yeah. So it definitely sounds to me the way you're describing Harley, you definitely prefer Harley being kind of the hero over being the villain character.
Yes and no. I enjoy seeing her in either rendition, but I think that there's always going to be that, even when she is quote unquote the villain, there is that sense of hero in it. Like, oh my gosh, the title of the I will come to me in a moment, But the episode from Batman Animated Series where she kidnaps Batman to try to make the piranha smile.
Oh, yeah, that's Mad Love, yeah.
Yes, thank you. I was like, what is this? I was like, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Mm-hmm.
In that one, they literally show she's trying to do the right thing, mm-hmm. even if it is in something evil. Right. And I think that's the part that I think is the most appealing about her, is unlike kind of like you said in the very beginning, unlike Wonder Woman, she is doing it with best intentions, mm-hmm. but sometimes they're just the wrong decisions.
Right. And it's, all she really wants is to settle down with the Joker and, mm-hmm. and, you know, and she's convinced herself that Batman's the one that keeps getting in the way, where kind of the weird irony of it is that if Batman went away, that, you know, what's going to happen to the Joker? You know, he'd probably go even more crazy, you know?
Oh, absolutely. She unhinged, mm-hmm. I think she also kind of grounds him a little bit too.
Yeah. And I always thought it was really great that, you know, especially the way Mark Hamill played the Joker, he could play him as kind of the more annoying prankster, or he could play him as like a murdering psychopath, and you could buy either version.
Mm-hmm.
And Arlene Sorkin, I think there were hints of menace with her, but I think for the most part, what did I say, part? I meant part. we can edit that. I always say that, but then I never do. I'm just like, oh, we're going to edit that, and I don't do it.
No, we're flawed. It's great.
Yeah, it's great. Exactly. Yes. Oh, my gosh. It all comes around. But, you know, Arlene Sorkin really, you know, there was, despite, you know, sometimes having a hint of menace, she always, for the most part, sounded very innocent, just very playful. And so there's sort of a mystery there. Like, is Harley really that bad? You know, especially in the early episodes, it's like, well, no, she's hench girl to the Joker. She's probably a bad guy. But
yeah.
She brought a kind of, you know, like that sense of mystery or innocence that was like, I don't know, there's something there that's, you know, like what's she all about?
Yeah, I think that's why also a lot of people were drawn to her, because I remember in an interview, they were saying that, like, she was just supposed to kind of be a one-off character. Like, she was never supposed to be what she is. Mm-hmm. And people just kept wanting her because there was something, like, exactly what you're saying. Like, you just didn't know what was her story. Like, why is she there?
Right.
Because of that exact reason. She just kind of didn't seem... She enjoyed doing the quote-unquote evil things. But there was always that sense of just, I don't want to say childlike, but for like, I guess, naivete when it came to all the things that she did.
Yeah.
Because it was like, well, why? It just kind of boiled down to, I think eventually they realized it was because of her being completely enamored with the Joker.
Right.
But you didn't get to know that until you kind of, they started to fully flesh out everything about her, because, you know, they can say that we all knew what was going to happen towards the end, but I don't know if she was as fully fleshed out when they first made her. And then to start to see, like, oh, well, if you think about it this way and that way, and so that sense of mystery allowed, I think, so much of her currently to mm-hmm. become part of her character, her canon, essentially.
You know what I'm realizing now, as we're talking, when I said that Harley is, you know, has this staying power and it feels like she's been there since the beginning, you know, 80 years ago, even though she hasn't been. I'm kind of realizing now the reason for that is she's a strong enough character that she works on her own, you know, and the best Batman villains, best Batman characters, I should say, the reason they've stuck around is because they work on their own. If you can tell a story with Harley that doesn't have anything to do with Joker, doesn't have anything to do with Batman, and, you know, and nowadays she's not even in Gotham City anymore. She's in Coney Island, with the Sam Humphries arc that's going on, and he's been great with the character.
I I finally cracked down and bought it. I've been so bitter about it, but because I just loved Jimmy and Amanda's rendition, and then I was like, finally, I was like, okay, I bought volume 6, so to finish that arc, and then I was like, okay, I'm gonna read it now, because the costume is fantastic, like, that costume, and I was like, I need it, I want to read it, yeah. I need to see it.
Yeah, I was like, should be your new cosplay, the armor Harley when she's on a podcast.
Yeah, I cannot wait to read it, because yeah. I did actually end up, I really did end up enjoying post Amanda and Jimmy, but I was just so bitter at first, because they were just perfect, and then they're coming back, so I was like, I have to read it. Anyways, that was just my side story.
Well, you know, it does tie in, because, you know, that was her arc outside of Batman and Joker, you know, where she could build her own supporting cast, and she could be a lead character, and that's what allows her to have staying power. And that's what makes, you know, any character great. You know, they, you know, I mean, even going to like Dick Grayson, you know, he was the first kid sidekick, and he has staying power because he was a strong enough character that they could tell stories about him growing up and being Nightwing. And he works on his own, you know, without Batman, and just like Harley works without Batman or the Joker, or even Gotham City. And it's really great, you know. But you know, the funny thing, to go back to what you said, you know, you're bitter about Jimmy and Amanda leaving. I was that way when it wasn't Paul Dini for the longest time. I was just like, I was like, nobody else can write her. Nobody else gets her. And it was just, there was no reason for me to think that other than just being ignorant. But then, you know, reading these other stories, I'm like, no, they get her. She's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that she's not, say she's an easy character, but to write, because I don't think she is, because I think that you can definitely go way over the top when it comes to. But it's very interesting to see the different ways people write her. Because Suicide Squad, the version of the movie, is drastically different than Jimmy and Amanda, which is drastically different than Paul Dini. But they all still are the same, which is what I think is just so... They're just rooted in something completely different.
Yeah, that's her staying power as a character.
Yeah.
And it's a... You know, and that's the thing. She's such a strong enough character that, you know, she's, you know, they're doing the animated series on DC Universe, which I'm really excited to see. And you know, she's been a comic book star for years. She's had her own comic for years. I think the first comic was written by Chuck Dixon in the late 90s, early 2000s, something like that. 'Cause she was introduced, excuse me, in the DC Universe proper, as opposed to the animated series, through the No Man's Land arc I think that was the late 90s, early 2000s. And again, she just, like I said before, she fit right in as if she'd been there the whole time. And it's like, well, look at her now. She's a movie star, you know, that's awesome. And I'm really excited to see her interact with, you know, the other female characters in Birds of Prey, you know, with the Black Canary and Huntress, and that first it was funny, that first trailer they released, I saw reviews on Twitter where people would be like, why are they even calling it Birds of Prey? It should just be called the Harley Quinn movie. And I was like, all right, well, Harley Quinn is obviously the selling point. I mean, if you watch the trailer for the first Avengers movie, Tony Stark gets the limelight, but that's a 2-minute trailer versus a 2-hour movie. And I'm sure that these characters will get their due in the movie itself. And
yeah, I hope so. 'Cause as much as I would love, another Harley Quinn movie. I don't think that it would be as interesting, but I think the thing that I love about Harley is not her sidekicks. 'Cause I wouldn't call them sidekicks, but the company she keeps is also what truly makes her, because I think if you look at just from Jimmy and Amanda's run, they have her whole entire Coney Island tenants and the freak show and the burlesque show and her roller derby, and you have the gang of Harleys, and like you have, You have Poison Ivy, Catwoman. You have all the people that she hangs out with that I think also make who she is. And so I think that, and I know that people are like really upset because she didn't find the Birds of Prey. And like, I get that whole entire argument, but I think that it's just the fact that it's a well-known name, and whether it'll be, I don't think they're trying to change the fact that like she is not the original founder of Birds of Prey.
Right.
But I think that it's going to be an amazing way to introduce people to these characters who they may or may not have any knowledge of.
Right.
Because I think that's kind of, to some extent, what happened. Not that people had no idea who Harley Quinn was, but like, that was their first meeting of her on the big screen.
Yeah, and in Suicide Squad.
Yeah, and so like, you know, I don't know, that's what I loved, because Margot Robbie was saying like, she wants to share the screen mm-hmm. with other amazing female actresses. And so I think that they're going to be, it won't just be the Harley Quinn movie. It's right. going to be, truly be the Birds of Prey, or whatever we want to call them. But I don't know. I'm very excited about it.
I am too. You know, and I had a friend accuse me of being kind of a sucker for all things DC, and I kind of am, but you know, but it's because, you know, I grew up with these characters, and I felt weirdly, you know, I mean, the joke I always make is like, kids today are so spoiled when it comes to comic book movies and comic book properties in general. You know, when I was a kid, we had to wait 3 years for every Batman movie, and we had no idea if it was going to be good or not. So when, you know, people go on and on about how great the Marvel movies are, I just kind of, I slump my shoulders a little bit. I'm like, well, DC's great too, you know? It's just when, you know, the main exposure is probably the Arrowverse shows, which all of them are, you know, most of them at least, are, you know, I love to death. And, but, you know, and then seeing somebody like Harley Quinn, I'm just like, you know, when they announced Suicide Squad and they show the cast, I hadn't actually seen Margot Robbie in anything. So I was excited. I was like, okay, I don't know her. So that means there's a clean slate going into this movie.
She definitely was still, she was still pretty new. Like, she had Wolf of Wall Street, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had done other stuff, but that was like kind of the high she was riding in on.
Right.
And I think that, to some extent, she was still relatively new, and it was nice that they didn't put just somebody with a face,
right,
or with a name, I guess, in that role.
You know, I think that goes back to, you know, I watched this documentary about the Dark Knight movies, where it seems that when they were making the original Batman movies with, you know, Tim Burton and Joel Schumacher, it was like, well, let's get like established movie stars to play these characters. You know, so that explains why, you know, like Jack Nicholson was cast, and Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger, because they're big draw names.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. And, you know, the less said about that, the better. But, and then when The Dark Knight came along, the first one was obviously Batman Begins. When that one came
along. Sure, yeah. The trilogy.
Yeah, yeah. Christopher Nolan was like, well, you know, we can cast actors that people know, somebody like Morgan Freeman or Liam Neeson, that people know but aren't quote unquote movie stars, you know what I mean? So I'm glad that that's the trend we see now. You know, and I remember, you know, this off topic obviously, but when Chris Evans was cast as Captain America, I was like, that's a terrible choice. I saw him in a bunch of comedies. I was like, mm-hmm. he can't be Captain America. And then I went and saw the movie, and I was like, nope, I was wrong. 100% wrong. He was perfect. And it was nice seeing that with, like, Harley's first scene in Suicide Squad, when she's kind of flirting with the guard, and then you see kind of the flashback when she's, you know, with the Joker. And, mm-hmm. you know, he's like, oh, we got company. And she's like, Betsy, Betsy, Bats. I just screamed. I was like, that's Harley.
I literally got chilled. I remember that I went with a group, a large group of people, and everyone looked at me, and I was just in awe. Yeah. I was like, well, yes, the movie had flaws, and there was way too much going on, but mm-hmm. I genuinely feel like the performances in that movie, but especially like the performance of Harley, was just, it was really well founded. Like, mm-hmm. I think that it felt very real, because I was at first also nervous about the fact that she wasn't so dramatic with the New York accent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, it's gonna, And then like the whole entire argument about they're gonna over sexualize her, which I don't think you can with Harley personally, but like I think it was just the right amount of sex. It was the right amount of sass. It was just everything. It was so good. I got chills. It was exactly what you said. Like, that was Harley to me.
It you know, and that, me coming from the animated series, that's what it felt like to me. I felt like I was watching a live action, you know, scene from that. And I love that, you know, Joker jumps out of the car, she goes off the bridge, and Batman jumps after her, and she tries to stab him, and he just punches her. I just laughed. I was like, yes, that's, you know, just in those, you know, couple of minutes, I was like, okay, like, I'm on board. And even later, it's kind of heartbreaking when the Enchantress shows them everything they want to see, and it's just her in a normal life with the Joker. And people kind of gave some flack about that scene, like, oh, you know, Harley doesn't want that. I was like, have you ever read a Harley comic? Like,
yeah.
You know, when she was all about the Joker, that's exactly what she wanted. You know, mm-hmm. she wanted a normal life.
I mean, they have that whole entire version of it when she has the baby and the 1950s housewife. Like, the thing I loved about, particularly about the, and whether that's Margot Robbie or whether that's the writing, was I truly felt like you could look at any version of the comics mm-hmm. and find that in the movie.
Right.
When it came to particularly Harley Quinn, I felt like it was very much like you could look at a comic like, ah, I see that here. Yeah. And like, especially now with Suicide Squad or Birds of Prey, there's so many little Easter eggs and callbacks to the comics. It's really nice, because sometimes I get very, when it comes to the movies and to all of that, like, it's very easy for people to forget that these things started as comic books.
Yeah.
And so to have little Easter eggs that would make you want to go read the comics that this stuff was based on, because I think that should be the goal of superhero movies and comic book movies, is to bring you back to what the base is.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because I do think that, to some extent, in a sad note, like, comic books are dying because books in general are dying. And so it's just, it's just something that I hope people will see that's the work that's in there, so that no one will go, I just think it was really smart that no one will go from the movie to the comic book and be disappointed, because they'll be like, these are completely different characters.
Right.
It'll be like, I see what this was. Like, you can find it in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Chelsea, this has been an absolute blast. I'm so glad, you know, we got to do this today.
Yeah, me too.
So, do you want to do a plug for your Twitch
show? Oh my gosh, yes. That would be actually amazing. So, I guess now it's Wednesday. So every Wednesday we stream a Dungeons and Dragons show. It's called The Natural Ones. It's on Twitch at twitch.tv/natural_ones. And it's an actual play Dungeons and Dragons show where it's based on the 5E rules, but there's a lot of homebrew spice in there. So we would love if you guys get a chance to watch. Totally not related to comic books, but still tons of fun. So
it's all good stuff.
If you like fantasy and you like just having a good time, feel free to come and watch us.
That's awesome. I'm excited to watch it. I've seen little clips that you guys have shared on on Twitter, and
it's an undertaking, I will say. So we do have it on podcast if it's easier to listen that way, because it's like, they're long. You know, if anyone who ever plays Dungeons and Dragons knows, it's incredibly long. So, mm-hmm. but if anyone gets a chance, I appreciate you letting me mention that.
Yeah, of course. You know, well, Chelsea, well, you know, this has been great. You know, did you have a good time?
I had an amazing time. I was really nervous, as I'm sure you are very aware. I was so nervous. I was like, oh my God. So I had a really great time. It's just, I just love talking about Harley. Like, I think that, not that there's always something I can learn from other people, but it's just very interesting to always hear. Oh, I guess that is it. I can always learn something about her because someone always sees something different from her.
Yeah.
So I love talking about her.
Well, that's great. And I'm glad you had a good time. We'll definitely have to have you back. We'll find another topic for you.
Oh my God, please.
Yeah. Especially after the movie comes out. Maybe we'll do a review or something.
That would I'm be counting down the days.
Yeah. it's so close now. February, right? Oh my gosh.
It's so close. I've watched the trailer on repeat. I'm probably like a million of those views. But I cannot wait.
Oh yeah. I think it's going to be great. I'm excited for it. Well, Chelsea, thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course, thank you.
And to all of you out there, you know, have fun, be safe, but not too safe. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't have a sign off yet. I'll figure it out one day.
I liked it. It's a little dangerous. I like it.
Ooh. All right, folks. Have a good one. Bye-bye.